peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow. Talk to me nice, talk to me nice, you've got to wine me and dine me. Don't try to fool me, bejewel me, either amuse me or lose me. I'm getting hungry, peel me a grape.
Greetings and thank you for joining me this week. Today's guest is French-born winemaker Loïc Le Calvé of Australia's illustrious Tultarny Winery. Boy, I was sweating bullets over that name. Anyway, Loïc has a unique background. So without further ado, let me welcome Loïc Le Calvé. How are you, Loïc?
I'm very well, Robert. How are you?
I'm excellent. We're into fall now. The weather in San Diego is beautiful. And I'm wondering, what brings you to our shores?
Well, as you know, Robert, Tultarny has been exporting wines to the U.S. for a few years now, probably around 20 years. And I think it is part of it for me to bring the wines with me and share my passion with all Americans who want to drink Tultarny wines or who are actually drinking Tultarny wines already.
You know, I agree with you. They are wines that we know about. They've been in our marketplace for at least a couple of decades. I've been familiar with Tultarny for some time, in particular some of the sparkling wines that you fellows make down there. What I found fascinating, you've been at the winery as the chief winemaker, what, about 2 years now?
That is correct, yes.
And I looked at your background, and I saw that you started in France. And I was scratching my head, and I was wondering, how does a young French guy who has a passion for wine end up halfway around the world making wine in Australia, and also some of your wines you make in Tasmania? What's the story there?
Well, it's a very interesting story. I guess I was, working in the Bordeaux area at the time, and I always wanted to travel a little bit, and the wine industry is great for that. It allows you to travel. And I had this opportunity to come to Australia working for Tultarny as an intern, I guess, in 2001. And I came down, I went to Tultarny, I went to Clover Hill, our winery in Tasmania, where we do the famous sparkling wine. And I just loved it so much. And basically, then I left after my little short 4 month contract and decided to come back the following year. And Tultarny gave me a call and said, well, we're looking for a winemaker, and you probably are the guy we're looking for. So that's how it happened. But yeah, it's more it's all about passion and wanting to do something different. As you know, French rules are very strong for winemaking, and we're very limited by the region, by the AOC, obviously.
At the things you can do,
what we can do, and in Australia, of course, there are much less limitations. And I thought, you know, the sparkling grapes we get from Clover Hill are so fantastic, and also some great Cabernet and Shiraz from the Pyrenees, or even Hiskin, where we are now. And I thought that was an opportunity that I just would not miss. So it's as simple as that.
Well, you know, I'm sure that this is going to sound like a self-evident answer to this question, but you were raised in Brittany.
That's right.
Where did you acquire your interest in wine? And how did you translate that or turn that into a career? Now, I realize that, you know, our perception over here is that everybody in France loves wine, but not everyone is a winemaker or even has an interest in going into the business. So how did that happen for you?
Well, my father has a fine wine retail store in Brittany. And
good prices?
Yeah, exactly right. And it is, I mean, at a very young age, I had the opportunity to taste wine, because this is something that we're allowed to do in France. I know you're not here in the U.S., but in France we're allowed to have a bit of a sip of wine even by the time we're 14, 15 years old. And so, and my dad was guiding me through all of these and telling me, you know, would you like to taste this and compare all these wines? And I was fascinated by how different wine can taste, even though they all come from grapes. And even further, when I understood more, I thought, well, some are old Shiraz, and they taste different, and I just wanted to understand it. And I asked my dad when I was, I remember, 15 years old, and I said, I want to make this. I want to make one. I want to understand it.
You were that young when you decided that maybe this might be something that would interest you for a lifetime.
By 15 years old, I knew I wanted to become a winemaker. And as you know, in Brittany, we wouldn't have any We don't have grapes, so I've never seen a vine by then. I wanted to become a winemaker, never seen a vine.
It's
so
a little too cold.
I decided to, as soon as I was 17 years old, I decided to take a car and go down to Bordeaux and have a look at what was happening. And it just revealed itself even more, and I knew that's exactly what I wanted to do. So from then, yeah, went to university in Bordeaux and became a winemaker at a fairly young age, and worked there for a little bit, and as you said, now I'm in Australia.
I understand you spent a little bit of time, I don't know how long, it could have been just working a harvest or whatnot, but I understand you spent a little bit of time at Chateau de Chem.
That's right. Vintage 98 it was. Just fantastic experience, just for harvest as an intern again. Well, a bit more than that, actually, because I was actually doing a scientific study for them at the same time, and it was great. I mean, a fantastic opportunity, and I still have a good relation with some of the guys there and the winemaker, Sandrine Garbai, who is doing a fantastic job.
And it's a beautiful property.
Yeah, no, it was a fantastic opportunity, something you cannot forget ever in your life, even if it's one of your mm-hmm. first experience.
Now, I understand you also spent a little bit of time in California.
That's right, yeah. 2001, I came. After I went to Tarzania as an intern, I went to Sonoma County for harvest as well, where I spent about 4 months again as an intern. Mm-hmm. And after California, I decided to go back to Australia.
So you've worked in the wine industry in France.
Yes.
You've worked in the wine industry in Australia, where you currently work, and you've worked very briefly here in California.
That's
so
right.
So can you do you have enough experience with those regions of the world to summarize the difference in mm-hmm. winemaking philosophies between, you know, obviously, you know, both Australia and California are New World, quote unquote mm-hmm. New World, and then you spent a lot of time and you actually grew up in what we consider the Old World of, mm-hmm. of wine culture.
Mm-hmm. Well, basically, I'll start with France because this is where I actually started. Well, French winemaking in those days, I know that's, again, 7 years ago or 8 years ago, was still fairly conservative. I understand it has changed a little bit because I still travel back to France quite regularly, mm-hmm. but still, there's still a bit of still a bit conservative in the way they do winemaking, certainly due to the to the rules and the laws to make wine, very restrictive. But also it's a different way of approaching the wine. It's all about, certainly about terroir, which is something very important also for Talsani and Clover Hill. But it's really focused on where you are and extracting the most from the the soil and the climate where you are, the wine region. Where I guess in Australia we have a slightly different vision of winemaking where maybe it's a little bit more modern in the techniques we use, and we are a lot more market-led in a way in Australia, the way we make wine. We've got a specific market that demands this type of wine, and we mm-hmm. try to make this wine, but still representing the region where we are. Certainly, the Tartani wines are very, very regionalistic, so very representative of the region. But in the same time, I guess the Shiraz we intend to do at Tartani would be a bit more friendly, basically, for at an early age, where in France sometimes we still find wines with a bit too much tannins. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to talk a little bit California, yeah. Well, my experience was in a premium winery which does a very French style of Merlot and Cabernet, so it was fairly French in a way, the way we were making wine over there.
Mm-hmm. Now, the difference that you noticed between California and Australia, because a lot of people think that these two wine-producing countries are very similar. Are they not similar in your mind?
Not really. It's still very different. I guess it has to do with it has to do a lot with climate and differences, but how what we try to achieve in mm-hmm. Australia. I guess the fruit level is maybe a bit more intense on the nose in general in terms of winemaking, and this is certainly bringing these sort of characters. That's for sure for me.
Now, in Australia, where you're located mm-hmm. with Tartani, you have vineyards in Victoria, which is much cooler than the most famous region. And I say most famous region, at least I believe it's the one we're most familiar with here in the United States, and that's
yes.
the Barossa Valley. So it's much cooler there, but it's warm enough for you to grow a lot of red grape varieties like Shiraz and, Cabernet and Merlot. You also work with grapes from Tasmania, where it's much, much cooler. Can you explain to me the differences between these two regions and how that presents challenges for you?
Yes, definitely. Well, Tartani, yes, is based in the Pyrenees, one region of Victoria, the state of Victoria, in central Victoria, actually. It is considered as one of the cooler climate in Australia, as you said, as opposed to McLaren Vale or Barossa, which are quite popular here. It's much cooler, but certainly a very Rhone-style sort of climate.
Mm-hmm.
Warm days and fairly cool nights. Which is great for Shiraz, for Cabernet, and even for Sauvignon Blanc, which we produce a lot. Then you've got, of course, Tasmania, and Tasmania is a lot, lot cooler, much further south than Victoria, obviously, on the little island. Especially, I guess, our vineyard is by the sea, so the maritime influence is quite strong. To give you an idea, it's about the same latitude as Champagne in the northern hemisphere. So, mm-hmm. And this is exactly where we Clover Hill is exactly where we grow our sparkling grapes. Now, this is very cool climate, very wet climate, and pretty high in altitude, old volcanic soils, and it is challenging to grow grapes over there because obviously you got all sorts of disease, and it is very expensive to maintain this vineyard. And mm-hmm. but it is fascinating. I mean,
but ideal for sparkling wine, right? Ideal for sparkling wine?
Ideal for sparkling wine, yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned the comparison with champagne, and champagne is ideal for sparkling wine, one would have to say, but it's very difficult to get a really great Pinot Noir from, a table wine from the Champagne region, although occasionally they have vintages where they can make a fairly decent.
You're spot on. I think we have tried at Clover Hill, to do some still wine Pinot Noir, but you're right, the conditions aren't appropriate, and it takes forever to get ripe, and it really is perfectly adapted to sparkling wine, or our vineyard specifically being in a beautiful valley. It's nice, green, lush, but you wouldn't get your Pinot Noir ripe for still wine. We even struggle to get some Chardonnay ripe for still wine if you wanted to, but perfect for sparkling wine. As you know, most great sparkling wines in Australia now come from Tasmania, and the good reason for it. It's really the climate and the soils.
Sure. Now, I'm very interested in the area, the main area for Tartarny, which is in Victoria, mm-hmm. South of, way south of Sydney and closer to Melbourne.
That's right.
And I could say what I think about the difference between the styles of red wine, the Shiraz, the Cabernet Merlot, between Victoria and Barossa, between Victoria and McLaren Vale. But I would rather hear your take on it.
Yep. Well, I guess what we're trying to achieve is in our particular region of the Pyrenees is wines a lot more in balance, a lot more fresher with good natural acidity, but also multiple layers of spice, mint, and also obviously some good plum fruit and and I guess some blackcurrant characters, but certainly very different to the more jammier style that you can find in the Barossa, for example. As I said before, much cooler climate, much more prone to this sort of what we call unripe characters that you can find in wines, and I guess it gives you a lot more elegance and finesse in your wines. And there is now, obviously, a new sort of fashion for this style of wine to come back. I think people really want to drink wine with their food now, and these wines are particularly well adapted to food.
I would agree with you there, and I'm glad you used the word spice. I have always found that red wines from Victoria seem to have a spicier component, although you will find wines from McLaren Vale and Barossa that have some spice sometimes. I guess it depends upon the vintage. But it seems to be a fairly common trait of reds from Victoria that they have this spiciness. And you also mentioned the minty or the eucalyptus. Can you, in a blind tasting, can you just nose, say, a flight of wines? And when I say a flight, so that's kind of a technical term for just everyday consumers. But by a flight, we mean a lineup of, say, 12 glasses in front of you. Can you nose a flight of red wines that are from the various regions of Australia? And just from the nose, pretty well pinpoint where the wines are from?
Well, I'm not sure if I would pretty well pinpoint them, but I have a very good idea. I'm lucky enough to do some wine judging in the Cherry Freak wine show circuit in Australia, and we have big flights of wine. Like, we can have up to 200 Shirazis, for example. But you can pick up which area they're from most mm-hmm. of the time. You know, when you've got your black pepper, it is likely to come from the Grampians region of Victoria or even the Pyrenees. The eucalypt is very much Pyrenees-like. And then you've got, obviously, the more jammy style, which is very, very Barossa-like. Or you got the greener sort of paper, which is Mornington Peninsula. And you've got the more savory style, which you know would come from Hunter Valley. So, mm-hmm. And this is great about Australia is all these regions producing fantastic grapes with their Shiraz. Australia is well adapted for Shiraz, but so many different regions producing different styles. And I think that this is a really, really good thing for us, for the whole Australian wine industry.
You know, our listeners can obviously tell that you have a French accent or at the very least a European accent. But have you learned to speak Australian yet?
Yes, mate. I've done that for years.
Yes, mate. Now say Hunter Valley. I love the inflections that you hear from, you know, because we have a number of Australian winemakers working here in the United States, and it's pretty easy to tell where they're from.
Yeah, it's a bit more difficult with me. Obviously, I've got this mixed accent of French and country Victoria English, because when I arrived in Australia in 2001 the first time, I just could barely speak any English, so I basically learned living there and going to the local pub and talking to the locals. So my accent is a bit mixed, and it gets a bit confusing for a lot of people, but at least I think people can understand what I'm saying.
Yeah. Now, is Australia going to be your home, or do you have any tug at the heartstrings to maybe return to France someday?
Well, Australia is definitely my home. I love Australia. I'm married to my beautiful wife now, and she's Australian.
Oh, so that complicates things.
It complicates things a little bit, yeah. But long term, you never know. I mean, I still have a very, very strong passion for my country, which is France mm-hmm. originally, and for the wine industry in France. I think there's a lot going on at the moment, as you know. And I think it's great. I think I'm really looking forward to go back there in a few years. But my job is not done yet in Australia. There mm-hmm. is, for me, a lot to do. I'm so passionate about the brands I'm representing and always trying to improve the wine. So I've got a few years in front of me yet down there.
Do you find it difficult to shift gears sometimes, though, between, you're producing a couple of labels that we see here in the United States, the mm-hmm. Tartarny and the Clover Hill, and then I think you have another label that is pretty much only seen in Australia, but I could mm-hmm. be wrong about that. Do you find difficulty shifting between the sparkling wine and the table wine?
Well, I can assure you that it is challenging. When you make sparkling wines from Tasmania, and you also have to make Shiraz from the Heathcote region, which we'll do also, which is a warmer climate, and then you do some Cabernet from the Pyrenees and some Sauvignon Blanc, which is a blend of Pyrenees and, as well, and a bit of Tasmania, it gets a bit challenging. And I mean, switching over is, I guess, not a big deal. It's just you just focus to your different techniques and you just put a different hat on when you do your tastings. But it is fascinating anyway.
Well, I would think too that just the mindset of what ripeness is, because for sparkling wine you're looking at a completely different ripeness level than you are with your table wines.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. I mean, when it gets challenging for a lot of people to taste a sparkling wine base, as you can imagine, when we pick the fruit, we pick it very, very, very high acid mm-hmm. and fairly low sugars compared to a red wine, and it gets a bit difficult because you have to adjust your palate. And but you have to be pretty well organized when you taste the wines in a winery, where you start with your sparkling wine and finish with your red wine, and try to do it very carefully, so you don't basically what we call kill your palate with too much acid to start
sure.
with.
Now, I'm not sure how many of our listeners are aware of this, but the harvest for sparkling wine obviously is earlier than other grapes because you're not
sure.
looking for the same level of ripeness. So you begin your harvest with sparkling wine, and then you go all the way through to probably what's the last thing you pick, your Cabernet?
No, we actually at Tartarny, we now have also a little bit of Petit Verdot and a bit of Mourvèdre. So,
and that comes in later?
Yeah, that comes in later. So at Tartarny, when we start picking our sparkling grapes, probably the second week of February, as you know, the other side of the world. So second week of February.
Everything's flipped,
And then we will finish with our Movado or Petit Verdot, similar time, in late April. So it's a long, long period.
I was going to ask you about that. That's a very, for you, especially producing these different styles of wines and so many grape varieties, must be a very long harvest.
It is a very long harvest. But then, again, you go to Tasmania, and Tasmania being so cold, we start picking our sparkling grapes late March or early April. Mm-hmm. So it is very challenging.
Now, is your wife in the wine business?
No, not at all. Very different business. Better this way. So otherwise, our lifestyle would be very difficult. I mean, as you know, being a winemaker during harvest, we don't see much of the family.
I was going to say, doesn't she look at you sometimes and say, Loic, you've been harvesting forever. Is it ever going to end?
No, that's exactly right. She, it's a bit like that, and we don't see each other very often, that's for sure. But she understands. I mean, it's been my lifestyle since we've known each other anyway, so she understands it all.
You know, I know, and I've been to Australia many times, I know that it's not big on importing wines from outside of Australia, other than champagnes and maybe a few Italian wines. Mm-hmm. Do you have the opportunity to taste wines from around the world very often?
Well, I do. I'm lucky enough to travel, so I've got the opportunity to try wines. I go back to France to see the family quite often, and again, with my dad's retail store, I've got the opportunity to drink all these wines, or to try them. And in Australia, yes, we import a lot of French wine as well. Maybe less US wines, probably because pricing is a bit high in Australia, mm-hmm. so we only import a few American wines. Clos de Vaud, for example, our sister company is imported, but it's still very limited. And I had to come up here to try your wines because in Australia it's far too limited at the moment.
You know, I know that your company is owned by a Frenchman. Did that play any role in you ending up at Tultarni?
I don't think so at the time. And as you know, Tultarni has had this heritage with another French winemaker prior to me. And the owner, you're right, is French. But I don't think so. I just think it just happened to be that I am French more than anything. As you know, the winemaker in at Clos de Vaud is not French. John Clouse is an American man. It happened.
Loic, I think we're out of time. Mm-hmm. Looking at Alana, our engineer. Alana, I don't know. I hear music. We're done? Okay. That's it for Whitley on Wine. Until next week.
Ciao. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Loic.